Yes, tonight we're going to deal a little bit with the supernatural. We're also going to go alien hunting. That's right, Whitley Strieber back with us on Coast to Coast, and we've got lots to talk with Whitley about when we come right back. Not that he needs a huge introduction, but let me tell you a little bit about Whitley Strieber, author of more than 30 best-selling books, including Communion, Superstorm, his latest new nonfiction book, Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained. He wrote that with Professor Jeffrey Kripal. Both were on with me a couple months ago. Offers a unique new look at the subject of the paranormal. We're going to talk about that. He's got a television series, Hunters, based on his book, Alien Hunter Novels, and that's on the Sci-Fi Channel. And Whitley's other novel, Alien Hunter, The White House, was published just about a month and a half ago. You are very busy, my friend.
Very, very busy indeed. I'm also going to be at Contact in the Desert.
I will see you there.
I will see you. Oh, good. I'm glad you're going to be there, too. That's going to be fun.
We're going to celebrate my birthday that weekend, Whitley.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So that takes courage, and more courage as you get older, George. You're going to find that out, too.
Absolutely. Hey, tell me about the evolution of the television series Hunters. How did that evolve from your series Alien Hunters?
Well, it evolved from my series Alien Hunter because Gaylan Hurd liked it. She thought there was a place for it in television, and she got together with a terrific writer, Natalie Chaidez, who transformed the books into this incredibly intense series, which is it's very exciting. I saw the first six episodes before it was released. I read the scripts, and because I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but suffice to say, I know what's going to happen, and it's going to be very extraordinary. A lot of surprises are in store.
Well, you know, this is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's exciting to get a book series turned into a TV series like this, too. And I also wrote an origin story that appears in the paperback that's got the cover, the Hunters cover on it, because the two titles are obviously slightly different, Alien Hunter and Hunters. And that's an interesting, it was a very interesting journey for me, that origin story, because it's, without getting into too much about it, it's about what it would be like to be not human, but in human form. And that is the underlying theme of the novels and the major theme of this Hunter series.
Good for you. Good for you. Because, you know, you've been so successful, Whitley. You know, your books, Communion, turned into a movie starring Christopher Walken. It's just fun doing that. You know, the coming global superstorm that you wrote with Art turned into the Day After Tomorrow.
Right.
Which I watched in St. Louis a couple weeks ago when I was in St. Louis. They reran it again. It was just really cool to see all this evolve, and knowing you makes it even better for me.
Well, you know, there was a major climatologist. Back when we published Superstorm, we were really kind of laughed off the stage because Art and I were saying that this extraordinary storm could happen, something beyond, way beyond even what Superstorm Sandy was. We gave a word to the language. The word was superstorm, and now people use it regularly. Every time a tornado hits, it's a superstorm. Not really. Just recently, one of the major climatologists in the country, it really confirmed the superstorm scenario. I don't think he even knows about the book. He doesn't know about the origin of the theories in the book or anything like that. He's strictly a climate scientist, but he indicated that this type of storm can happen and that it could have absolutely incredible sustained winds in it. Sustained winds in the hundreds of miles an hour for days. And that not only that, but it has happened in the past. And I thought to myself, gee, we were right.
Of course you were right.
All along, and they were laughing at us. And it made me feel both good and bad.
Well, there's so many things I want to talk with you about tonight, Whitley, but let's start with the story, of course, that has been breaking the last couple nights, and that's Hillary Clinton, the supposed Democratic candidate for president. It's been talking a lot about Area 51 and UFO disclosure, and whether she gets to the bottom of it or not at that appropriate time, who knows? But what's your take on that?
Well, it's a fairly complex take, and it's been made a little bit more complex by the fact that Leslie Kean, the UFO researcher and author of the book about UFOs, generals, and other officials speak out, had an article in the Huffington Post today. Was an interview with a gentleman who had a high security clearance, essentially saying something I found very interesting, which was that even though he was quite interested in UFOs, during his time in government, he never found any information. There was nothing there in terms of hidden material that he was aware of. Of course, that said, no matter how high his clearance is, if he didn't have a need to know, nobody's going to tell him. So, and now let's get back now, though, to John Podesta's comment in his tweet of last February. Podesta said that it was his chief regret that this material had not been released by the Obama administration. That's a big thing for a man who was White House chief of staff to say as his last statement, official statement. It's a major thing. It must mean that he, contrary to the gentleman that Leslie Kean interviewed, he must be aware of the existence of such documents. But then he made a very telling comment. He's now Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, by the way. He made a very telling comment. He said, "It's the law." Now, what did he mean by that? It has a very specific meaning. The National Security Act requires that information that may be of military significance but is unknown be withheld, be classified, until such time as the potential danger that it represent may or may not represent is known. And this is one of the reasons so much of this material in the distant past was classified. But the law requires, after 30 years, that material that has not been, that doesn't have any national security significance, be declassified and released. Now, that made me think that during the late 50s and early 60s, before Project Blue Book came along and the Air Force washed its hands of all UFO studies, that there would have been material. There would have been things written and analyzed, probably even photographs. Gordon Cooper said there were photographs of a UFO taken at Edwards Air Force Base. He saw them.
He was up there flying, wasn't he?
And he saw UFOs while he was flying, but he told me personally that he saw this. He even described it in great detail, what he had seen. And he said this film, actually it was film, not photographs, was sent on to Washington, and it disappeared.
That's right. They took it.
It's not that there isn't anything there. It is that there is not anything there that anybody now knows about. Because another thing that happens is that when there's a very compartmentalized need to know, and everybody who needs to know that retires or dies, and it's not moved forward because it's not of any significance, it's lost.
I want to read this quote from Gordon Cooper, the late Gordon Cooper. This is amazing, Whitley. I had a camera crew filming the installation when they spotted a saucer. This is at Edwards Air Force Base. They filmed it as it flew overhead, then hovered, extended three legs as landing gear, and slowly came down to land on a dry lake bed. It was a classic saucer, shiny, silver, and smooth. About 30 feet across, it was pretty clear it was an alien craft. Isn't that amazing? This is an astronaut.
Well, yeah, and that's essentially what he said to me. He also said to me that it was extremely shiny. He said it was the shiniest thing he'd ever seen. And that dovetails with, actually, with even a piece of footage that I'm going to show at the
Contact
in the Desert conference of just such an object with that same extreme level of shininess. It's not landing. It's in the sky. But it's an authentic video. So these things are there. Whether or not you can draw the conclusion that Gordon Cooper drew, that it's an alien craft, is another question entirely. As in Supernatural, I go into that very deeply with Jeff Kreipl. I don't think we've really solved the mystery of where these are from or what they even are yet.
No, that's true. I mean, the glorious part of it, the glamorous part of it, wants you to believe that they're coming from other planetary systems, because I don't think we really want to think we're alone in the universe. I've always thought that as a kid. But you're right. These could be coming from dimensions, other universes, the hollow Earth. Who knows?
Who knows? We can't be sure. Like, for example, in my cabin, one of the things we used to have witnesses, a lot of people came up and had encounters with the visitors at the cabin. And sometimes when the visitors came into the cabin, they smelled like the ground. In other words, it was a forest floor. And if you ever go into a forest and start digging, after a few minutes, you realize, this smells pretty ripe. A forest floor is, the earth in a forest floor is basically rotted leaves and things.
Right.
It has a distinct odor. And Raven Dana, for example, one of the ladies who's gone on record as having had an encounter in that cabin, mentioned that the creature that she had the encounter with smelled like that, like it came up from out of the ground. And so what could we be dealing with here? I'll tell you another story that's fascinating about that. We were on a private road, and one of the other people on the road came over to the house to talk, to discuss some road work that we needed to do, because the two of us had agreed to be responsible for the road. And as we were talking, and this had been going on for a couple of days, there was a sound like a very high pitched whine coming up from below. We had noticed it a number of times, and if you sat in the wrong place, it kind of got in your teeth. You know, you didn't want to, you would move. So we're talking, and the guy is there, and the sound is coming up from below, and I can see he's a little uncomfortable. And I didn't say anything because, you know, I mean, what could I do about it? But it was like a drill down deep in the ground. And suddenly, a stream of blood came out of the center, pulsing out of the center of his forehead.
Jeez.
And came rushing in with Kleenex to help him and get it staunched. And he left, and from then on, when we talked about the road, we did it by phone. He somehow decided, I think, that coming over again wouldn't be a good idea, and I don't blame him. But that noise was a drill down in the ground. And what was so fascinating about this was we were on top of a big seam of iron, the same seam of iron that the Iron Mountain Record Depository, the original Iron Mountain Record Depository, is drilled into in a complex of tunnels that reaches all the way north from about 5 miles north of where we were to 20 miles north of where we were, Woodstock. So something was going on under there. And I'm pretty sure that it wasn't us doing that kind of drilling, because I don't think we have drills that cause people's blood vessels to burst.
No, we probably don't. So with all this confusion of where they're coming, we are convinced that something's happening,
oh,
right?
Something is certainly happening, George. Oh, yeah. I mean, it certainly is happening. And let me go back to Podesta, because I think it's what he said. When he said it's the law, he meant that there are documents that are no longer covered by the national security blanket that could be released. Now, that means it's my guess is it's things like the photographs, the film, rather, that Gordon Cooper was responsible for, and it's documents that probably conclude pretty frankly that these must be intelligently guided craft of some kind. But in 30 years, there's never been anything suggesting that this was somehow a national security issue. Therefore, the documents legally should be released, and I think that's what he was referring to. Interestingly enough, in the Leslie Keene interview, the comment was that there was a culture of denial now within the government, and that anything about this subject was immediately and completely dismissed. And I think that's true. I think I would not be surprised that most of it, or maybe all of it, has simply lost the thread. The Air Force, if you're in the Air Force and you talk about this, you're scorned. I know that because I know people who have had that experience. They've sent me emails. And if you are in the Central Intelligence Agency, I don't know exactly what happens, but I do know this. When I was doing implant research with Dr. William Mallow at Southwest Research in Texas, the director told Dr. Mallow that their CIA client took a dim view of UFO research. And that means to me that it was significant enough to them for them to care about it. In other words, why would they take a dim view of something they didn't care about?
That's right. That's right. Woodley, I want to talk about the book, The Supernatural, when we come back. We talked a little bit about it back in February, I think a day before it hit the bookstands. And I want to get into the supernatural. There's something going on in this, whatever we call it, that is very out of this world. And I think you and Professor Kripal put your fingers on it. You got it.
Yeah, I think maybe so. We came close anyway.
As close as you come. So stick with us. Whitley Strieber with us. His website, by the way, unknowncountry.com. Also his last name, Strieber.com. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. And you can contact Whitley through his websites. His latest book is called The Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained. As far as we're concerned, by the way, you can email me at george@coasttocoastam.com and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Definitely sign up for the free Coast newsletter, if you would. It's called Coast Zone. You can sign up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast with Whitley Strieber, our very special guest. We'll be back with him in a moment. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Whitley Strieber with us. Whitley, as we talk about Supernatural, your new vision of the unexplained, it is, since it's come out, selling like hotcakes, and it has been one of the most important books on the paranormal in years. You hit a home run.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's really, if you go and look at it on Amazon, you see it's got 50 or more really positive reviews. And, you know, I'm very grateful about that. The book was written first of all, Jeff Kripal and I became friends. He's a specialist in mythology, and in modern mythology. He's a professor at Rice University, and he's interested in the communion effect and what happened after Communion was published, which certainly I didn't expect, and my publisher didn't either, that there would be millions of people who had this experience and were responding to the image on the cover of the book. And this, of course, gets me back to the question we raised earlier, which is this really about aliens or not? Because would aliens really do that? In other words, would they really enter lives the way these presences do? And I just don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like something we would do if we went to another world, but maybe we would. I don't know. In any case, we got to kind of to corresponding, and then he wrote the foreword for the previous book, Solving the Communion Enigma, and then we decided, I've got a lot of experiences that I've never wanted to just publish, because they were hard, and some of them were very intimate. There's a lot of sexual material in Supernatural that I would not have published without an authoritative voice to interpret it. And that's what Jeff offered, a very authoritative voice that could put everything into an academic perspective. We always look toward science as what will solve the question of what is really going on. But that's only partly true. The academic community's got a big role to play, because if you look back across our history, like Jacques Vallée did in his brilliant book, Passport to Magonia, you find that this type of encounter is part of human life and always has been. I always say, you know, maybe they are aliens, but if they are, they might very well have been here longer than we have. And what does that make the relationship? Are they aliens or not? In any case, we wanted to build a ground for people to talk and think about this. For example, if Hillary Clinton does release some documents that make it unequivocal that there is an intelligence presence out there or in here, then there's going to be a beat, and the media is going to say, the next question is going to be, well, what about these abductions? And then they're going to go out and they're going to find the most scary abduction stories and abduction and most frightening abduction research materials they can. And that is what's going to go right out on Fox News and CNN and everywhere else immediately.
It'll be huge.
It will be huge. And people who might not have actually a very useful idea of what's going on are going to immediately be put in the forefront. And the scarier the stories they have to tell, the more coverage they're going to get. And that's going to be our first social response to this. And that's not enough, actually. We need to do better than that. And Supernatural gives thinking people a good ground to look at this in another way, through the medium of question, rather than jumping into conclusions that may or may not even be accurate. I mean, I had a terrifying experience initially in December of 1985. And I woke up in a little room full of these strange beings, and I couldn't stop the nightmare. It was real. And yet, over the years, the 30 years that have passed since then, 30 plus years, I've come to a place of understanding of this experience, and the experience itself, the more I have understood it, the more rich it has become, and the more it has changed. And that's the road we'll need to go down if there's ever a disclosure. We must not go down the other road of getting terrified, of being angry, of folding our arms, hunching up in our corners, and just being silent toward this. We're going to have to engage with it somehow. And at first, one thing is people are going to say, oh, my God, they're really here. Well, when are they going to land? And the answer is going to be not soon.
Not soon enough.
Not soon. They're going to be there. Nothing will change in the way they interact with us. In fact, I would be surprised if anything ever changed in the way they interact with us, because there is something in the gristle of reality that makes the relationship we have with them like it is. I don't know what that is, but it's there all right. I'm not so sure. I have a feeling that they are interacting with us as extensively and deeply as they can now. They're already here. They've made contact.
All right, let's talk about the possibility of, as some callers called a couple hours ago when I had Alex Jones on Whitley, they want to know if they've infiltrated government already, if ETs are in government. What do you think?
Isn't that an interesting question? I had an experience connected with this, and here's what it was. This was back in the early 90s. We were living in Brooklyn at the time, right in Brooklyn Heights, and the World Trade Center was still there, and you could see it from the windows of my office across New York Harbor. And I was, at the time, being asked by a staffer with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence to provide them with questions that they could then ask various intelligence agencies to try to get to the bottom of whether or not these agencies knew anything about this UFO thing. Because at the time, there were loud explosions being heard on the West Coast, and the senators from the West Coast were asking what's going on, and the Air Force was saying, it's not us, we don't know what's going on. And so, therefore, the committee was then going to it was never told which specific agencies were involved, and asking them, do you know what's going on? And then they were coming to me and saying, Whitley, can you give us questions that might help us, because we have to ask the right questions? And it was very interesting, because while I couldn't hear the answers, I did, by the questions I was asked to give them, I got some idea of what they might think is happening. I also had a brief conversation with Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the senator from New York at the time, who was on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and was a great advocate of less secrecy. He had apparently read Communion, or had had somebody read it, give him the gist of it, and he was obviously completely convinced that there was something going on within the government that he felt he should have access to and didn't. In any case, this staffer telephoned me and said, do you know that from an office at the top of the World Trade Center, they're able to watch your computer and watch everything that you type on it?
Wow. I believe that.
Well, it turns out a computer keyboard emits a very weak radio signal, and if you've got the right kind of equipment, apparently, you can pick that up from a distance. And so I told my wife and son this, and my son said, as a joke, he was about 13, he said, well, Dad, why don't you say you're an alien, and they better back off. So I wrote them a note saying, I'm an alien, you better back off. And of course, I'm not an alien, but it was just a joke.
I don't think you are.
Not a joke to them. The next morning,
dead serious,
our little street was filled with these cars. It was just a short street, a dead-end street, and there were so many cars in it, nobody could get in and out. These parked up and down the street, with these men in them, and you know, I was appalled because they looked sort of grayish and official, most of these cars. And I telephoned a friend, a detective, and gave him some of the license numbers. And he immediately said, oh, well, those are federal cars. Those are all Ulster County license numbers, and that's where they license their cars. And so I called the staff, and I said, I'd done this. And he said, oh, you shouldn't have done that. And I said, well, look, I'm not an alien, and I want all those cars to get out of there. He said, I'll take care of the cars, but I want you to remember something. The greatest fear they have about this is that aliens who appear to be human will infiltrate our government. I said, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. And he said, well, maybe it isn't. And that was where we left it. And I'm telling you, that was a practical joke that backfired.
What kind of propulsion system do you think they have, Whitley?
Well,
if it's a propulsion system.
I can tell you what I have observed and experienced, and that was that sometimes one of these devices would come over our cabin and come down into the front yard, and you could hear it when it was right coming over the roof, and it would come from the west and come down over the roof. You wouldn't be able to see it in the front yard. You could glimpse it every once in a while, and sometimes one of the children would see it, usually more than the adults. But and it was small, but as it slowed down and it came over the roof, you could hear a kind of clicking of ball bearings as if something that had been whirring very fast was slowing down. And that suggests to me some kind of a propulsion system that must generate a field of some sort. Otherwise, why would anything be whirring? In other words, there was no jet or rocket involved. It was something that turned very rapidly.
Are they time machines?
Gosh, isn't that a fascinating question? I don't know. You've had Linda Howe. She knows a lot about that subject as it relates to the Rendlesham Forest incident. And there is a certain amount of evidence that that represented a movement through time. Now, it's quite fascinating because physicists have determined that movement through time would, there's no bar to it in physics. In fact, we're not even absolutely sure why time goes in the direction it does. But the reason it's interesting that they have been able to move photons, particles of light, backwards in time and discovered that no matter what, a photon will never go back in time and impact itself in the past, in its past. And this means that the so-called grandfather paradox cannot ever be enacted. In other words, if you go back in time, you're never going to be able to kill your own grandfather. It's never going to happen. No matter what skills you have, it can't happen. That means that the so-called principle of least action, another principle of physics, enforces the grandfather paradox. And that's why there is no bar to time travel. We just don't know how to do it. But maybe somebody does. And if they do, then, and this is what my wife, Ann Strieber, always, this was her favorite theory, that it was time travel. And she said, because if you were traveling from the future into the past, you would want to disguise yourself as something that was not real in order to widen the scope of your ability to maneuver in the past. In other words, to trick the grandfather paradox as much as you could. And that what you would do by making the people of the past believe that you were something that you were not. And it's a fabulously interesting theory. I think it's a real possibility.
Whitley, back to hunters for a moment, which ties into almost everything we've been talking about tonight. What do you believe now? What are your belief systems about this?
My beliefs in regard to whether or not there are aliens mm-hmm. here in human form? Is that what you mean?
I think you think they're here. I don't want to put words in it.
Well, let me put it this way. I'm sitting here right now with an implant in my left ear, which has been there since 1989.
And you're afraid to take it out, aren't you?
I was afraid. Ann always said, don't take it out. It's got value. It's valuable to you. We don't know why, but this is not something that's... It was obviously, judging from the way my mind works, it's not a mind-control device, so that wasn't ever an issue. Here's an interesting thing about it. And speaking once again of Dr. Mallow, I was in his office one time, this is a few years later, and it turned on. It most recently turned on about 6 weeks ago, just before I was going to go to a UFO conference. I was sitting with a relative, and I was giving my speech that I was going to give at the Ozark Mountain UFO Festival, the same speech I'm going to give at Contact in the Desert, by the way. And she said, Whitley, your left ear has turned bright red. And I said, oh, that's the implant. It's turned on. They're very interested in this speech. It's called A New World, If We Can Take It, by the way. And it's based on a comment made by Colonel Philip Corso, it's very important. He had an encounter with one of these beings and asked this creature, what is on offer for us? And the answer was, a new world, if you can take it. I'm all about taking it. I'm all about taking it, wresting it out of their hands. I'm all about bearing it and facing it. So in any case, getting back to this implant, I'll just give you a very brief...
30 seconds before the break.
Okay, well, we'll do this then after the top of the hour. Just very briefly, in May of 1989, it was put into my ear by people. I saw them clearly in the room.
Humans.
They looked human, at least. But what they did and the technology in their possession was awesome. It was far beyond anything we know. And then when we got a little piece of that implant, it was a combination of biology and technology.
Amazing. We'll talk more about that, and we'll take some phone calls with Whitley Strieber, author of The Supernatural, next on Coast to Coast AM.